right. Well, welcome to another episode of Flip Your Friday. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. And we have a very special guest today, Horace Wormley. Thank you very much for just allowing us to hang out for a little bit. I really appreciate it.
Man, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just so the guests know, Horace. Yeah. I mean, look, you played basketball, Division I basketball, which is a dream of many kids out there, right? Mm-hmm. Finished up at Vanguard, I believe, right? Division I scholarship athlete.
NAIA though. NAIA Division
One. Yeah, NAIA Division One. And then after that, you played. It's 12 years of professional basketball.
Yeah.
And Forrest, he played on 6 different continents. So, it's not always the NBA, that you can play, but you can generate a lot of capital, a lot of money, and a lot of special experience.
Absolutely.
Through the game of basketball. And that's really what you did. And you're implicitly an entrepreneur, and that's what I want to drill down today. I know that you're from Pasadena, you're from LA, but you've done some tremendous things even during your career. And Casey, one of the first things that I really wanted to start off with is the fact that I think it was maybe in your second deal or very early on in your career, you had an instinct that you didn't really need an agent, so to speak, to negotiate your contract. And so you gave yourself your own solution. So this is the first place I want to jump off with today, because I think that's very special to have that perspective coming right out of college or very shortly after, to have even the gall to want to do that. So can you dig into that for a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. It was a really unique opportunity because it was mixed with a lot of naivete. I'll even say some stupidity to take that risk, but also just feeling like I had a really awesome support group to do it. And that included big brothers of mine. I refer to them as big brothers who had already embarked on their professional careers, NBA and overseas. Had a really good support system with family, friends who are attorneys. And the naivete, stupidity part was coming out of college, not realizing or understanding the industry to the best of the knowledge I think I probably could have. Mm. And so I had an agent coming out of school. I had signed to Jeff Fryer was his name. Wonderful guy, wonderful agent. But I was very much aloof and so didn't even know how to use the resource in him that I had. And so, yeah, once I'm thinking I'm supposed to come out of school, make $20,000 a month, my first contract, and here I am, you know, kind of not necessarily arguing with them, but like, yo, what's going on with these contracts that I am receiving? And I end up firing them.
You fired them, do you say, you fired them out of naivete? You fired them out of ignorance, not knowing how to use them? Is that what you're suggesting?
I did. I think there was a mix of both, of going, you know what, I think I can do this myself, but then also firing them out of, if I can go back and do it all over, I would have still done it myself and led myself, but I would have used him in a different capacity, a different resource, instead of depending on him.
So I'm a numbers guy, so yeah. I want to dive into a number so people understand what, like, a little more context, and forgive me, because naivete is me right now. Yeah, I don't really understand the idea of like what actually they're.
He also doesn't understand basketball.
No worries.
Yes, we can get into
he
that.
He understands
too.
Business though.
Yes, I do.
He does.
So let's look at the numbers. Just walk us through what an agent. Maybe just start with the basics, what an agent does, what they get paid, how they get compensated, and just give us some idea as to what you were leaving dollars-wise, because we also then want to compare it to, okay, what was he able to negotiate, what were you able to negotiate, and kind of look at it apples-to-apples comparison.
For sure. So America and international basketball work completely differently when it comes to agents, right? So American side of basketball, even Canadian, so North American side of basketball, you will pay your agent out of your own purse, right? But when it comes to international basketball, the teams typically pay the agents, right? So even in that dynamic, it sets a completely different tone, something that I had to learn very early, very quickly as well.
Right.
The second part of that is the level that I was coming out of school at. I'm not coming out of a Duke or North Carolina or UCLA or what have you. So I wouldn't have garnered the same amount of cash or capital or salary coming out of school of many others, right?
He's making introductions. Is that what you're saying?
He's not only making introductions, but he's also creating context around what type of player I am and what value I can bring to not only the team, the organization, the market that I'm in. So, yeah, it's not just introductions.
When I say introductions, is he creating film and presenting that? Are you doing actual interviews? Mm-hmm. What is that like? Because I think everybody sees, like, NBA draft. Right. And then they watch, like, on ESPN. Right. They see college kids, and then they see NBA. But there's a whole other world of basketball and professional basketball that's going on that a lot of people don't know about. So can you kind of walk us through some of that?
Sure. It is a very collaborative time and place when you're coming out of college and even in between, depending on where you are in your career. So I am submitting film. We are putting this together together with one another.
Okay.
There was a ton of collaboration.
So your first deal with your agent, he's getting paid from your purse?
No, he's getting paid
from the team.
From the team.
Okay, so got it.
What country? Deal. What was your first country?
Germany. And I ended up going there anyway to go play. But he had a ton of relationships there. He had played there himself. And so that was like the ideal. That's typically the ideal place if you're coming out of school, you're a rookie. It's a really good place to play. Germany, France, those are typically good places to play.
When you say good, how are you basing that?
So they're top three divisions, say Germany from BBL is their top division, and they go Pro A, Pro B. They're really professional, number one. The organizations, the way they're structured, the way they're ran are really professional. The culture is probably the closest to American life. So this is a 21-year-old kid, first time living abroad, first time having their own business. You don't want to send them into, no disrespect, but like a Saudi Arabia or some third world war country type of thing. Yeah, exactly, right? So. Mm-hmm. And then also the leagues are very, very competitive. So if you are playing, you're not top league BBL team in Germany, you're Pro A or Pro B, those leagues and those teams are competitive to go play top league somewhere else. Spain is another one. I can't forget Spain. So those are those leagues that you can go play. If you're not in the top league in that country, you could play their second league, third league, and work your way up to.
Just really quick, so I get an idea on the number. So about $20,000 a month is what you negotiated on, or your agent negotiated?
No, not at all. That was what I was, in my naivete, was thinking I should be getting.
Okay, so out of school. So the numbers wise, what did you get on your first contract?
I ended up making $1,200 a month on my first contract.
Okay,
and did they provide a car and housing?
Yes,
as
so they did all of that. They did car.
What does your agent
housing.
Get?
Well,
he's is
so like he'll a, get he'll
a
get
bag
10%.
Of nuts or
no? Essentially.
He's like, I spent more money on trying to get cut up your edit your film.
Correct. This is for him. This is genuinely a passion of love.
Yeah. So when
to
you
help you grow and
when
build.
You fired him, he was like, "Thank you."
Yeah. He was probably like cussing me out behind doors, all type of stuff.
No doubt.
Sure.
He's like, "I'm gonna take my $120 and go home."
What's great about Jeff is he's actually still somebody I can call today.
That's
so
great.
Thankfully, he probably did cuss me out a bit, but he understands the business.
I watched Wynn for a number of years being friends with him, and when he was representing players, it was not just about the deal. It was about the relationship, and both on the negotiating side with the team, but also the player. And those relationships are evident in his friendships and his circle today, which is, I think that's...
It's funny. Like, Alan Ball comes to mind. I mean, I think he fired me twice, right? But we're friends.
Yeah,
we went to my wedding. We're very good friends. It's part of it. And if you understand that culture and process, you continue.
Yeah.
You continue.
Yeah. The other, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The other really awesome part of it, too, is I think Jeff saw something in me that I hadn't yet to really, really see in myself that had absolutely nothing to do with my ability on the court.
Yeah.
And that was the conversation that we were having. And that's why I can very humbly say, like, there was a lot of naivete and stupidity. I wish I would have, been able to just step back and go, okay, I kind of want to do this way, Jeff, and this is what I'm thinking. How can you help me in this path versus I don't like how you're doing it? Let me just part ways. Because down the road, he was able to gather a collective of guys that he was able to spin into coaching careers or help them become agents later down the line. So he had a much bigger plan and bigger play, something that he saw in me that my basketball game could then leverage. Mm. But we never, ever made it to that spot again. Stupid 21-year-old kid he was dealing with.
So you started at $1,200 a month, but you played basketball for 12 years.
Yeah, I didn't stay at $1,200 a month, thankfully.
so you're in, let's say you're in Germany,
I was in Germany. Landshut, Germany.
Did you get to understand then immediately after a year what countries had good basketball and what countries didn't, and what certain countries were looking for. Because as I understand it, mm-hmm. certain countries see America as branded certain ways. Mm-hmm. For example, in Japan, you don't want to be they look for big men, yeah. for example, right? Yeah, they don't correct. Look for guards.
That's correct.
And in other countries, there's other scenarios. Did you learn that quickly?
Very quickly. Very, very, very quickly. Actually, about 2 months into my first season in Germany, I learned it really quickly. I have one of my big brothers. I call him. His name is Coco Archibong. Went to can't think of the college he went to. Ivy League school. Really, really smart individual.
Brown.
Was it Brown?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. We're going with Brown. Played in SoPop Poland, EuroLeague team at the time. So not only did he teach me tricks of the trade of how to get care packages in and just how to navigate the European space, but he also told me very quickly and taught me very quickly, understand your value, understand what market you're in, understand that you're a 5'7 guard, and that Europe may not be the place for you, but this is a good place for you to start. So I learned very, very quickly. I had another veteran who I was vying for our point guard spot. We were vying against each other, and he was still very helpful in educating me about different markets and business. So very quickly, I had some guys in my corner that were willing to put me on game, if you will.
One of the things we talk about in this podcast is like mindset, and when you look back, how were you adjusting in that time frame of coming out of college, being sent overseas? But for listeners that are not necessarily basketball players, mm-hmm. but being 5'7", mm-hmm. playing professional basketball, walk us through some of the things that made you different, elite, that mm-hmm. made you competitive in a way where you were able to get paid to play a sport that you love. Like, those are the things I think that you can pick up on for people mm-hmm. listening. So walk us through what you were like at that mm-hmm. stage in your life and mm-hmm. and then maybe how it evolved, right? Sure. Right? Because the person that you are at 20 is not who you are at 32. And if you played 12 years, can you give us some idea as to what that process looked like?
Absolutely. I'll go back to one. I was a 12-year-old freshman in high school. So I started school really, really early. I graduated awesome. High school at 16. 5'7 is the peak of my height. So I've been short.
Same with him.
I've been short my entire life. So it wasn't anything by the time I got to 2021 that I had to adjust. My basketball game was already equipped for a small guard. The adversities I had in my everyday life, if you want to call them that, I had already become well equipped with them. I was adjusted to them. Was very confident who I am as a person, very confident who I am as a point guard.
Is there a chip on your shoulder type of
no,
thing?
No, not at all. It's okay. Actually the reverse. I had a former coach of mine somebody else I still speak to, Idris Jones, who put things in perspective for me one day when I was at Pasadena City College. He made me aware that I'm an anomaly, one. He said there's Shaq on one end and then there's you yeah. and Earl Boykins on the other end.
Yeah.
So what it did was open my eyes to my height being an advantage, and that something else that he was just made me very aware of is like sometimes coaches are lazy and they prefer to go with the taller guards because it's less coaching they have to do. You'll hear it a lot. Height is something you don't have to teach. But when you get with a coach who's really adamant about teaching the game and development, they can take anybody from 5'7" on the way up and teach them the skills of the game. And I was, again, very blessed to have a coach in that way. So I learned, again, at the age of about 13, 14, even with my father, just explaining to me and showing me ways that my height would become an advantage. It's something I get to do now to this day, right? Mm. So you can get as low as you want to get playing me, but I'm already low, so I'm going to get by you. And yeah. there's certain tricks in that way.
So when you equate that to the real world, yeah. it's like understanding what you are, the things that you can control and change your mindset. Absolutely. Like a lot of people would look in on the basketball court and mm-hmm. say 5'7" is a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But if you have that mindset of believing that, hey, look, absolutely. You got to get low right. to guard me. I'm going to be quicker, faster, right. or more nimble or use basketball skill versus just my height or getting lazy. You're going to work a little bit harder absolutely. On some of this stuff.
Speaking at height, I mean, absolutely. We've already explained the low in terms of your lowest salary at $1,200 a month.
Indeed.
Give me a spread. Where were you at the pinnacle of your career?
Yeah, the highest was China, which was $30,000 a month.
Mm. So that's a big difference.
So, okay, so then yeah. if we're still talking about the economics, what was you were your agent at that point?
I was my agent at
so
that point.
So if you negotiate 30, do you also get the spread from the team for the agent?
No, it doesn't work. But what I was able to get was perks on the other side. So I wasn't able to get the cut. I don't believe at the time, or maybe they still don't. FIBA doesn't allow you to do that.
Okay.
And so the team I was with kept everything on the up and up. But what they were able to do is just give me perks on the backside. So they could do it in per diem, or okay, they could do it in even housing, or because I did save them a ton of money.
Yeah. There, is so it still 10%? Is that kind of the going
rate? Yeah, that's about the going rate. Okay. And it fluctuates based on your salary, too. So you get something a little higher, the agent to get maybe.
Would you 13, rate China 14%. As the top country to get paid in right now?
As a country overall, yeah, I'd probably go China. There are some teams, some organizations in Europe and other places that will pay you top dollar. But country, league overall, top to bottom, China's probably still number one in what they pay out.
So you played 12 years in professional ball and had some really unique experiences mm-hmm. on the court, but mm-hmm. it looks like, too, just in learning and being coached. Mm-hmm. Walk us through then how that equates to today. What are you doing today, mm-hmm. and how do those experiences play a role?
Absolutely. Mentorship was and still is everything.
And now you're the mentor. And
now I'm the mentor and still being mentored as well. But it helps because I always joke and say that I got my PhD in basketball. It was the craft God gave me to explore the world through. It gave me a very unique worldview. I don't think you travel and touch six continents without gaining one and learning other languages, learning different styles of business, different cultures. So again, I joke, but it's very serious. It's very serious that I got my PhD in basketball. So I was able to tap into people who were in the financial sector, home and abroad. Folks who are in real estate, home and abroad. I've always had a interest in, one, I wanted to be an anthropologist growing up, and then it fell into wanting to be an entrepreneur. So those two things kind of converged with basketball and the ability to travel. And so now I'm able to kind of pay that forward with some of the things I was able to gather while I was playing basketball, tapping in again to people in the financial sector, real estate, art, architecture, you name it. The list goes on and on. I've had all these interests since I was a kid. And I learn these things or grab these things in a very non-traditional way, right? And again, got a chance to use my career as kind of this pilot program to kind of experiment and dump ideas into.
Let's talk about negotiation in business the context of sports. Yeah. Obviously, what you're saying is that sports gave you worldly knowledge in a way. It taught you a number of different things, indeed, which I'd like to flesh out later. But let's just talk about, just as an example, in a category mm-hmm. of negotiation, did you sense that every country that you went to or every culture that you introduced yourself had a different way of negotiating?
Absolutely.
Can you give me some sort of example?
Absolutely. So China is very much hardline. Like they're going to give you a number and they're whatever they can afford, if they will, and they're not going to budge on it much. So the negotiation comes a lot with them in what I would say now deliverables or incentives, right? So you got to kind of have to take that hard number. You may get a little wiggle room here and there, but what you can negotiate with them are the incentives. When I was in South America, they will fluctuate. They have a bit more wiggle room with you on certain things, and even to the point of being able to negotiate, I don't want to call it equity in a team, but some stake in like sponsorships that they had, mm-hmm. right? So they gave me more wiggle room to negotiate on the business side off the court.
And so recognizing culture,
yes,
it gave you an advantage and perspective on how to negotiate absolutely. Your deal, and that translates. And let's move forward to what
one point I want to make because people listening need to understand leverage and they need to understand where those push points are, because as you're negotiating a deal as a basketball player, mm-hmm. people are always negotiating deals, their salaries, mm-hmm. they're negotiating, with their husbands or wives. I mean, mm-hmm. people, you're constantly. It's a give and a take. So absolutely. Understanding the other party, understanding different cultures and things like that, but utilizing some of those things, what were you, because you were negotiating all your own deals after your first agent.
Sure.
Okay. So how do you use that today? So walk mm-hmm. us through kind of the life lessons outside mm-hmm. of just negotiating a basketball deal, but yeah. what does that look like for you post basketball?
Yeah. It starts for me with, and I hope this is not too vague, but a lot of listening. Like really sitting down and negotiating for me is not just talking and trying to be a fast talker and see. It's a lot of listening. It's a lot of identifying where the thresholds are. What is it that they want? Where can I actually add value versus me presenting something that I think it just has to be this way? And then finding where my threshold is with them and what makes me comfortable entering into this space or into this agreement with them. And then now I get to explore an entire world and we get to do it together. So I start even today with a lot of listening, because this is going to be a collaborative effort. I at least hope and that
you,
it will be.
Sorry, go ahead. You were using your network that you built in basketball with, you said, art and real estate, all those different things post-career, and using those negotiating skills that you learned in doing back and forth deals with different countries. And that's life, right? Yeah, that's how you ended up becoming, and when you say entrepreneur, that you went from athlete, professional athlete, to entrepreneur, and utilizing some of those things.
Yeah, I just want to touch base on the fact that listening just as a concept is so important that I've learned. And it's listening, by the way. Well, listen. Hey, listen. No, but what I want the audience to understand is that it's not just when he says listening, it's not just like keeping your ears open. Active listening means sometimes repeating to the person what you heard, because oftentimes if you don't do that, you guys will miscommunicate and the whole deal goes sideways.
That's a really good point.
So it is important to actively listen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good questions are also one of those forms of active listening, like really having investigative, insightful questions that open the door for another opportunity that you two may have not, or two, both parties may not have.
Absolutely. Ever
well, we seen. Talked about relationships, right? When you are actively listening and you're asking legitimate questions, you are building that relationship.
You're building
and if
rapport.
And rapport and relationships. Yep. And if, as you do negotiate, when you really truly do negotiate, those are really critical points in doing some of that stuff. That's a good point. Yeah.
So let's go to now. Yeah. Because obviously we have Frank out here too, and I'm really excited to interview as well. And you guys have formed an incredible partnership.
Yes, my brother. But
based on your experience and where we are now, and you've talked to us how basketball has kind of helped accelerate your knowledge and ability to negotiate and be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Now you guys created Layer Cake. Mm-hmm. You have what's called the District LLC.
That's correct.
And you have District Foundation. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind touching base first on Layer Cake and what you guys decided to do and how you help people, and then I'd like to get into what you're doing in LA right now actively through the game of basketball.
Absolutely. We actually touched quite a bit on Layer Cake. So
awesome.
My first 2 or 3 years, it was just me, but he and
what,
I hooked
what
up.
Is it?
So Layer Cake, no worries. Layer Cake is a consulting firm.
Okay.
Very generally speaking, but more so sports consulting.
Okay.
So after we kind of realized that he and I had a very similar mindset approach to the business and love for the game of basketball, we just connected, and he still continued to work with a few agents that were in his network, but he also really started to represent himself. And so once we hooked up and got together and realized this is something that we're both doing, that we both love to do and have been somewhat successful at, we started to do it, again, in our own careers, but with each other. So he would be somebody that I would call. Mm. And we never, ever played together abroad. We played together for the Los Angeles Defenders, which was the Lakers D-League team at the time, or G-League team at the time. But we separated from there. So when I went to China, I think Frank went to Israel. But we still always remained in touch. We were always just iron sharpening iron, sharing different.
Well, I have two questions, follow-up questions. No, one is, what are you consulting? That's a generic question. For sure. Two is, how the hell did you come up with Layer Cake? What were you guys eating dessert?
It's a great story. I'm glad I get to share it. So Layer Cake actually is the comes from a movie that Daniel Craig starred in. And his character didn't have a name at all. But in this movie, there's a line that he and I both love, and it is, the art of good business is being a good middleman. And so that was something that he and I just, sunk our teeth into and thought, like, this is what we are, this is what we like to do. So the consulting piece actually comes from us being really good middlemen, whether it was helping a friend or peer of ours understand their value in the market or with the team, taking a brand that may have reached out to us, whether it was in tech, whether it was food and beverage, whatever, connecting them with a player that made sense for them, helping an organization that we were currently with or one that we had played for in the past, find a player. Like, we were just finding ourselves in the middle of all of this business and consulting in all of these spaces.
Got
and
it.
Then coming home and, connecting with the Nikes and the Adidas.
Because
and
what people stuff. See, yeah. at least from my vantage point, I think a lot of people's vantage point, you see the draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
Football draft, baseball draft, everything is on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Those are draftable players.
Correct.
Right? But there are thousands of other players that are playing professional sports that nobody sees or understands or really recognizes how in-depth that process is, right? There's this another layer that maybe isn't as advertised, right?
Sure.
So you're picking up on a market that is there. And a lot of those people, because the dollars may not, they don't know what to do.
Exactly.
Right.
I always call it it's the worst game of musical chairs you could play, because the roster seats, the chairs aren't changing, but the players, every year there's a new crop of these people coming, right? Mm-hmm. But the industry continues to grow. So continue along that with that analogy. Like, I think it's just, we just understood the music more than anything. We just understood, like, the times. And here is where, if you can't get a chair in one of these seats, here's how you can leverage what you've already done and still participate in this game and still play in this game. So,
wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Cool. Indeed. That's really interesting.
Let's go to District, because obviously we kind of met through District. Yeah. You know, Jay Valentine, we talked about that R&B money
Jay
hoops.
Jay Valentine.
Yeah.
he's a G, isn't he?
He is a G. He is a genius.
It's interesting. And let's touch on that, because this is how we springboard into District.
Yeah.
I got introduced to him through Jay Valentine. Mm-hmm. I was invited to a run. I told Jay Valentine I could play. He said, "We'll see if you can play," right?
Sure.
And but what it? I walk in there. There's pros there. There's mm-hmm. Paul Pierce. Mm-hmm. It's Katino Mobley. Mm-hmm. Mobile. He is mobile.
Yeah, he's mobile.
I was very intimidated, right? Mm. But what I did realize, and what Jay Valentine explained to me afterwards, he's like, "Look, this is a special collective of artists and very high elite people. Mm-hmm. But my goal here is, obviously, we all love the game of basketball, mm-hmm. but it's to network, okay? So don't get it twisted. I see you as valuable, mm-hmm. and as long as you can play, you get invited back." Of course, I was very nervous that I wouldn't get invited back. I did. But that was a platform for Jay Valentine. He saw basketball, the game, as an opportunity to network, just like golf, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where District comes in. It's in LA. It's in Chatsworth. There's an LLC component, mm-hmm. and there's a nonprofit component. So let's go into what you talk about. Talk to me about District LLC first.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. District LLC is an amalgamation of Frank, one of Frank's brain children, and one of my brain children.
Sure.
So. Heavy in the tech, there was this concept that he and I worked on called Swizzix. It was about identifying a player's value, understanding your value in the marketplace, and then having the resources to take advantage of those two things. So we were able to take that concept and a senior year project that Frank had called the Gauntlet, that was an actual facility, and it looked more grandiose than mm-hmm. the one we have now, which he'll probably explain to you much better than I can of how we even got to that place. But the District started out of those two concepts. And so it gave us an opportunity to utilize all of our resources, our network, our skills that we had learned over the years, and put them into a bucket, essentially. So that first bucket, because we're now at two facilities, that first bucket was built around three things. It's on-court training, starting with basketball is what we know. So we started there. Sports performance, so your strength, conditioning, speed, agility, and then rehab and recovery.
Okay. And this is open. This is open to anybody. It doesn't matter if you're 9 years old. It doesn't matter if you're 50 years old. Because
8 to 80.
You see 8 to 80.
Yeah.
Because the value is implicit. It's health
Absolutely.
And wellness. It's business acumen.
Absolutely.
It's all of that.
Absolutely.
Right?
If to borrow Nike's ethos, if you will, if you have a body, you're an athlete. Mm. And so that's what distinguishes us, I believe, is we treat you like an elite athlete. So it's not a 24-hour fitness in that way. This is for the executive, this is for the elite entertainer, this is for the elite athlete, that in their own walk of life they are an athlete. You're synthesizing ideas all day, you're using your body all day, and so you want to prepare and recover in a way that what we know to be an athlete recovers. So we specifically cater and tailor what we do to that specific type of person, who is someone at 88 years old. And it's someone at 80 years old.
So the grounding anchor is operating at an elite level,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's grounded through sports, but
Absolutely.
It carries, it's pervasive.
Absolutely.
Is this a scalable business? Meaning, it sounds mm-hmm. unique enough, and with anchors that are different than, like you said, the 24-hour fitness, where you have a niche, and there could be something there. How are you looking at the business side of it?
Yeah, I'm absolutely biased, right? Obviously biased, but I absolutely believe it's scalable. And I think in its uniqueness is what allows us to be scalable. I think we're coming into a space and time in sports and business where becoming elite, and this is maybe sound weird, but becoming elite is a bit more accessible these days, right? With the nature of technology and how information is flowing.
Gathering information has become a habit.
Absolutely. So, yes, for that reason alone, I think it becomes scalable.
Okay.
And then the growth pattern that we've kind of talked about here is being able to take what we do and who we are in our community and find people much like ourselves. I'll mention Jay Valentine in Oakland. He's from Oakland. Could open something up like this because he's completely tapped into his community. Mo Harkless, who's from Queens, who's tied into his community.
Well, one question I have for you, is it a membership model? Like what is the economic?
So we're actually moving towards a membership model, but how we started it to keep that elite, that to kind of grow the brand, it was all done on packages and it was done through our network first.
Okay.
So
you say packages, you mean like one-on-one?
Yeah,
so
you can come, yeah. Okay. Everything is a boutique feel here.
Got it.
With us, right? Okay. So that keeps it elite. Even as we transition over into membership, it'll still remain boutique feel. We'll keep the numbers small, keep everything, again, just very, very personable. But
one of the things I really enjoy when I go up there and train or play or have access to is, you know, you may be working out, but there comes an NBA player that's doing similar workouts for you, and you're inspired, right? You're inspired, and you're not bothering them, but the fact that the optics of having two humans, maybe from two different walks of life, being there, both wanting to reach an elite level, it's something that's it's an intangible that's very interesting. It's
absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, like again, just kind of generic question, but how big is the facility, and then how many people work there, and how many people join?
Absolutely.
I guess
some idea of size. Our first facility, which is where all of the health and wellness space or activities take place, is 7,600 square feet approximately. Okay. Our second facility, which we've dubbed the Field House, that's more of our country club around basketball type of field where Wynn plays with Jay Valentine. That one is 14,000 square feet.
Okay. Is that the sweet spot right there, is finding something that's about 14,000? Is that?
For us, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. And it's weird, or not maybe not weird, but it's unique for us in that I think we could – the two businesses or the two facilities are very much interconnected.
Right.
But I think we could actually run with different models for both in different marketplaces, and they'll actually work. But our HQ is what we call it, our headquarters where we started small. We have about 200 members, roughly, in that space. The Field House Club, the Country Club, is a little more harder to tell just because of inside of that we have a barbershop, we have a shoe store, we're developing a lounge, there is a full court, we have residencies of Southern California Academy.
And you've built a reputation where the Clippers will come, Clippers or NBA teams Raptors will come, and NBA train.
Teams will come. So that one is really, like, we'd have to go back and really look at the numbers.
This seems pretty new. Right. Yes, I mean, new, like you guys are kind of discovering where the path is. I mean, there's not just one path. There's multiple paths. Now the challenge is picking which path is going to yield.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. We're 2 years in. And the beautiful part about it is we still have a small team, so it keeps us flexible. We're definitely taking a very agile approach to how we move forward with different things.
A startup.
Yeah, I mean, it's startup life. Yeah, I'm sure both of you
know. We were just talking about, you know, the startup mentality of being scrappy, rolling your sleeves up and you're getting involved and like, I love that. Okay, so let's talking about that because I'm fascinated by entrepreneurial spirit and startup culture. What are the things, what's your role and what gets you excited about these opportunities and walk us through you personally as you look at this in your career path?
Yeah, I've dubbed myself CVO, Chief Visionary Officer.
Okay.
I'm not wearing this hat on accident. Like, I am a creative and refer to myself as a business creative. I like to get inside of what we do or any other business that I, you know, can get my hands on and see how I can communicate that product or service.
You're a point guard. You're the point guard in business.
And it has never changed. It's funny, that was my social media handle for a long time. Point guardian of the galaxy.
I'm
a point guard. And that's what I genuinely love to do. I'm not a day-to-day guy. Thank God for Frank, because he can be, you know, COO, CEO of it all and get in the nooks and crannies. I'm a person that likes to carve out a path forward for us, and I like to see how culture integrates into what we do,
yeah,
and how we can be innovative in that space.
Incredible.
With what we have. So,
and that, I mean, yeah, that has to come. You were a born point guard, and that,
yeah, absolutely,
and you were trying to figure out through your 12 years, what, mm-hmm, am I going to do next? And it was just, yes, a natural path to entrepreneurial, yes, right? Like you were always bound. It was just a matter of when, right?
I would have to agree. I would have to agree. I didn't discover it probably till about 25, 26, where I got really confident in,
yeah,
that. But you're absolutely right. I've always had to read the room in a different way, find out where my leverage, you know, was, or how I can gain value or get value or offer value. I've always had to think in that way, literally, even on the court, to stay on the court.
One thing I want to touch on that I think is super important that people, me personally, I love how people find their confidence in, mm-hmm, ways that in areas where they're uncomfortable. So you're comfortable on the court by the, mm-hmm, time you're 25. Mm-hmm. You're uncomfortable off of it when you're talking about startup and entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. How do you find or tap into some of the things that you were building on confidence-wise, mm-hmm, on the court to utilize? Like, in your life, you're trying to find areas in which you're super confident, mm-hmm, and in transitioning into areas that you're not. So, yeah, can you talk to us about how you were able to identify that or use that at a young age, at 25, and, yeah, and how it's, I'm assuming, it's still probably prevalent,
sure,
in your life today?
For sure, absolutely. And I'll go back to, and I'll use the word boundary. Boundary is one of those keys, and failure is the other key. But I'll go back to my coach Idris making me aware of my height being an advantage. Mm. That was a boundary for me, because before that, I was trying to do what the taller guard would do, right? Mm. So I'm Magic Johnson. I'm trying to back you down, you know, or I'm getting too deep in the paint and thinking I can dunk over a big guy. Once my perspective flipped and I realized what my boundaries were, I was able to take full advantage of those things in my boundaries. And once I got in my boundaries, it was now taking a risk within those things to just fail. And I find myself doing that now in business. Mm. And I'm still a bit of a baby in this. I'm still trying to find my confidence in this space. But I am able to reach back into my pro career, just my basketball journey, and go, okay, develop a boundary. What are you good at? I'm able to say I'm not good at the day-to-day, yeah, stuff because I had to do it.
Yeah.
Right? We had to wear multiple hats, but I, yeah, can say I'm not good at that. Let me get back to what I'm great at, what I do really well, and then get comfortable failing
and
in that
space. Surround yourself, which is just like business. Yeah.
But this, yeah, is such an important point. I can't hammer this enough or emphasize it enough, is like appreciating the 5'7" versus saying, you know what, I'm not 6'2", right, I can't do this, or, right, I don't have that. Like, people get so caught up in what other people think or what they don't have, or, yeah, what someone's taller, better looking, got more opportunity, right, they silver spoon, right, like, no, hey, I'm 5'7", right, and I'm nimble, I'm quick, yes, my vision has to be good, I'm going to, yes, understand how the players around me are going to facilitate an offense. Like,
yes,
Pete, I just think that, yeah, man, that is – that is a, yeah, home run.
Absolutely.
That's a home run in life. When you start to realize every single asset that you have in your life can be utilized and leveraged into way bigger things if you appreciate it and just, mm-hmm, say, you know what, these are things that you're not changing 5'7".
I'm not changing 5'7".
And if you can look at it as an asset versus, mm-hmm, a liability, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, it changed your whole life.
Absolutely.
It was someone actually pulling you aside and saying, you're not Magic Johnson.
Right.
And so few people have that
mentorship.
Person in mentorship.
Yeah, mentorship.
It's
mentorship.
So critical. So, okay, my next question, I don't mean, yeah, to jump, no, but problem. How are you paying that forward with people? How are you, you have a lot of opportunities as the yeah, chief vision officer.
He's, yeah, doing one of these.
Oh,
for you.
I love it. A good job. I can dunk too. So
can't?
I can.
You can dunk.
I can.
Okay.
I can. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm able to pay that forward now through District Foundation.
Which is the third component.
Which is the third component.
This
is, yeah, this is the
yeah,
I got excited.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, no, this is,
yeah,
great.
So, no, this is the third component. This is the part where I'm able to take business brain entrepreneur off a little bit and get back into the love and the passion and all of the people that poured into me, the mentors that I had, my father, my mother. And I'm able to take those lessons, those things I learned living abroad, playing abroad, and pour them right back into a kid, whether it's on the court or off. Frank and I always use the term, we use the court as a classroom. So even when we're on the court, I'm still able to speak to a kid through art or through music, through anime, something that they can relate to them. And when we step off the court, we're able to pull in, which we've done, mental health therapists. So we do what we call mental agility camps that we hope get ahead of the curve and not wait till they, you know, are struggling with and feeling inadequate because of social media. We make sure that they understand their agency and the autonomy they have in their own voice. We're doing media training now. We step into technology and allowing them to understand statistics. And that analytics is a great path to becoming a GM. So these are things that myself and Frank were able to tap into in our journey in a very informal, non-traditional way that we're now formalizing and making a bit more traditional for the kids that we're
What age group are is the district?
So right now we're 9 to 14, more concentrated.
Okay.
But again, we get a ton of high school, college guys as well.
Are you taking anyone or these kids where parents are like, hey, my kid is a D1 athlete? Mm-hmm. Or are you just saying, look, you know, maybe for someone like my one of my kids would mm-hmm. not be a Division I basketball athlete, mm-hmm. but they're like, I want them to be good at life. Mm-hmm. Are they going to that type of program too?
They're coming now, which we're very thankful for because I wasn't that kid. So I can say that like Frank was the D1 athlete. I represent the other side of the pool. I represent kind of what you're saying your child does. So I'm really thankful that those kids are coming. But we were also very grateful to start with the kids that were and the parents, the families that were really gung-ho about their kid being a basketball player or an athlete, and they were willing to believe in us, you know, this new startup, this business. So
and the startup is the third component of this district foundation. Yeah. Truly is, it's an academy, it's education, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if I'm, let's say I'm in the affluent community, I'm in an affluent community in LA, and I'm debating between sending my child to, let's say, a private school like Windward, who has a reputation, it's traditional, and then I'm taking a look at district. Mm-hmm. My biggest concern, just point blank, is like, well, okay, great, I see basketball's there,
right?
And you're surrounded by NBA guys are coming in all the time. There's a culture that I would love my son or daughter to be exposed to. Mm-hmm. But what about the other side, right? What have you done to support the academic side of this foundation and venture?
We do what we've always done, which is reach into our network of folks because we know, again, back to the boundaries. I know where I feel like I'm an expert at.
Yeah.
And we tap back into the experts who are in our academians, I believe I said that right. Yeah. And so we've worked with the likes of LA Mission College who support us on the academic side. So with our academy, we do dual enrollment, which allows a kid, let's say they start sixth grade with their dual enrollment curriculum. By 10th grade, they're able to have their AA and their high school diploma, which allows for them the last 2 years to maybe tap into a internship of somewhat or of some kind. We've also have a partnership that we're working. I'm not at liberty to say the name, but a new high school academic institution that'll work with us in the same way. And then again, we have partners even in business that are able to come in and lend their expertise in a more hands-on tactical way. So
you're changing the game of education.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think so.
So, so just, I mean, again, forgive me for not understanding completely. So from at the age of sixth grade, a parent is going to make a decision with their kid if they're going to go to an academy or high school. You're not doing both. You're doing one or the other, and you're going to get an education. But is the percentage like in typical school at sixth grade, you're doing maybe 80% school, 20% sport? Is the percent, and I'm kind of making this up, right?
This back of a napkin.
Yeah. Is an academy similar, different? Is there the percentages change as far as what the emphasis is in the time?
Yeah, it's a lot different. One, because it is more tailored to the person or the kid or the family who wants to be in sports. And again, we're going to get to a point where we'll take on non-athletes who want to learn about sports journalism or want to go into kinesiology. Like, that is where we're growing into. Mm-hmm. But currently, you're able to identify that your child is really, really talented and wants a more concentrated educational and athletic experience. District is the place to come to. So
got it.
We have a couple curriculum tracks or pathways that you can take with us that'll kind of like work with your schedule, work with whatever academic level you learn at. So
we were fortunate enough to both be Division I athletes, and you mentioned it, and that's why I bring it up, is saying I got a PhD in basketball. We're similar, like what you learn in the competitive nature and teamwork and working with people and coaches and how like there's just so many things that translate into the real world. Like if I was didn't have the opportunity to play sports, there's no way I'm an entrepreneur. No way that my confidence is what it is today. And so there's
the same thing. Yeah.
So when I think about what you're doing, if I could have, and I kind of did, but I did it through self, my percentage would have changed. I went to a traditional school and it's 80-20. Mm-hmm. And if I could have adjusted it down to maybe 60-40 or 55-45, something like that, who knows?
It changes,
right? Because most of the time when I was in that 80% of school, all I'm doing is thinking about the 20% or, you know what I mean? Like, that, for sure. It's just the reality of it. Like, when you're good enough, you know your path, and like to refocus some of the time, right? Like, because I know that if I do my sport, it's going to translate into life, right? Absolutely. So what you're learning on the basketball court, football, it doesn't matter. That translate just is important, if not sometimes when you're better than average, then more important than that, what you're learning from a book or a traditional school, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think that's the component that I think misses with maybe some other academies that are out there. Something that we've really been focused on is not just going, all right, here's your sport, we're going to compartmentalize that, here's your academics, we're going to compartmentalize that. But what we've been working on is tethering or integrating your athletic experience into your academics. So that's why we say sports journalism. Yes, you have to have, you know, your English courses in order to be UC qualified or whatever, but that English course is going to be around something that you are currently doing, right? So you're gonna write an article about your favorite, you know, athlete, or you're gonna give us some background on
who's
on
Naismith
organization, right? Who's Naismith?
There's your history lesson.
So we integrate it at every level, and I always say, because I did the same thing, right? We went this traditional path academically. Had I been able to learn the way I learned traveling abroad and playing the game, where I learned business, where I learned art, where I learned language, all of those things, if I could have had the opportunity to do that starting at 8, 9 years old, where I'd be today, who knows? So we're going to get a chance to see that with our kids.
Well, we're lucky enough to be able to sit down and talk to you, and you give us all of these these different ideas and businesses that you're in, and changing the dynamic of what traditional schooling and how kids at those ages are doing sports while doing school. That's that traditional model, while it's worked forever, there's never been another alternative that's been viable, right? And and it's this whole idea of one size fits all for every athlete and for every student that is just supposed to work. That's not it, right?
I believe it's outdated.
It's
outdated, not only through my own personal walk, my partner Frank's personal walk.
Yeah.
I speak to other athletes, and they all, and I mean all, say the same thing. Even the ones that were very successful in the traditional path, myself included, I still know, had I had this alternative, I feel like I would have, you know, been a completely different species of player, which we call conscious citizens. Is what we're trying to raise.
I love that. Our listeners to be able to follow the journey. Can you give us maybe some websites, social media, or, you know, like these things that are just now starting to really take hold, and for those of us that want to be fans over the next, you know, 40 years, as you guys do your thing.
I love it.
Can we follow this, and can you tell us where we can get more information?
Absolutely. So our website is thedistrictdstrkt.com. Our social media handle, Instagram, is the.district, DSTRKT. And then our nonprofit is district DSTRKT Academy.
Okay, and we're gonna link all these. We'll flash it on the video and make sure that we link it in all of our bios. Indeed. But that was incredible.
Thank you very much. Man, it was a great conversation. And I think this is a great time to just kind of wrap things up today. Audience, you know, you can download us, like us, ask us questions. We love it when you slide in our DMs and ask us to ask for certain questions and guests. It's great. So this is a wrap for today, and I really appreciate you hanging out here.
Certainly appreciate you both. Thank you for giving me the platform and the time to talk.
All right. That's a wrap.
That's great. Thank you.